Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium. And everywhere else at 8 p.m.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my new friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
He hit our son!
Happy birthday, Polly.
Oh, no, I got me some. Well, I'm the Joker, baby!
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 306. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Trill Ballins on this Sunday evening here in November. We're reviewing Money Plane today. Movie came out in August, I think. Maybe July. I heard about it. Kelsey Grammer was in it. I know it went viral. And then Red Letter Media, who I'll reference their review, they reviewed it in August. But it is on Hulu. It is quite something. It is quite something. And then we're going to do a create your own shitty movie draft type thing. Much to get to. But before we get into that, what's going on?
Now that you start. You start, okay. Jeff.
Have you seen? So we work with somebody, Stephen Che. He wears many hats at Barstool now. I would say, like, ad sales is his primary thing, but he co-hosts a football podcast, producer of a very popular radio show, The Yak. He's a Bucks super fan, Tampa Bay Buccaneers super fan, but he has a knack for his thoughts and takes on food are their next level. Let me put it that way.
Okay. Good or bad?
He's a man after your own heart.
Recent one.
Okay.
I had said on radio that I felt as though Sprite Zero was garbage. And he said, no, Sprite. Actually, let me get the exact quote, because I feel like misquoting him would do a complete disservice. This is the exact quote. He said, Sprite Zero is the perfect beverage to pair with a tuna sandwich and a small bag of chips. So you're like, all right, that's interesting.
Is he in good shape? Because saying small bag of chips,
yeah,
sounds like something somebody in good shape would say.
Yes. He also famously said that the go-to move at Red Robin is getting the unlimited broccoli.
I remember that one.
So he tweeted this picture today. I don't think you've seen it. I'm going to just assume you haven't seen it.
No. Why?
Well, I don't know. You're aware of what goes on online. He tweeted this food with the hashtag food porn. It says, pre-zoo breakfast, half pound of buffalo chicken I made last week that I forgot about, with last bit of fancy cheese from charcuterie board 2 weeks ago, and blue cheese dressing over slightly wilted arugula. Hashtag food porn, hashtag foodie.
The Mikey Miles meal, isn't it true?
Yeah, but he's admitting. Is he using food porn in earnest? Is that
No.
Okay. But so he's admitting it's disgusting then.
No.
I mean, it's super disgusting, but
No. He's that. No, I'm sorry. His use of food porn is very genuine.
Oh, ew. No, that's gross. It's not food porn at all.
Slightly wilted arugula.
Old
cheese in a Big Deal because cheese can last for a while, so that's not that crazy. But like the half pound of buffalo chicken you forgot about.
Yeah, I'm gonna be honest. I won't eat if I cook chicken. It's got like 3 days for me before, like, until I'm just like I'm not appetized by that chicken anymore. So I don't know how long chicken lasts, but you could say like last week, right? You know, are you saying a week ago? Or are you saying Thursday? I think you'd be on the tail end of the life of that chicken. Chicken's one of those things that it's got to be fresh for me. It's got to be fresh. And I don't really like leftover chicken stuff all that much. It is, I'm very peculiar about chicken. I don't know why. I'm not that way about steak. I'm not that way about pork, but for chicken, like chicken just the wrong way just grosses me out.
If you've ever bit into chicken and it has a little bit of a bite to it, like a little give, just like somewhere you go maybe, or like the chicken tender. So this is why I don't like chicken crispers from Chili's. I had a bad one once. I bit into it and it had that really gummy bite through where
cheese curd.
Yeah.
Cheese curd.
Yeah. Nothing will turn you off. Like, it could be the beginning of a large feast. And if you bite into that and you got a little give, done. That meal is donezo.
Easiest way to do this, I swear to God, I swear by it, is just use a meat thermometer. Just 165, you're done with chicken, and you get an absolutely perfect cook every single fucking time. It's unreal.
I'm like, you're aware of what goes online. I'm like, yeah, mostly like what people send me. So it's like if a writer like leaves a browser window open with like hentai tentacle porn on it, that, you know, that'll get sent to me, and we'll laugh about that. I don't have a group chat where Stephen Che tweets get sent to me pretty regularly.
Yeah, but Ken Jack, I think, replied to it, and I know I quote tweeted it. So that was enough where it's like just the possibility you saw it. Where you saw it.
Usually I wait for Troy to send me what I need.
I almost sent it in the group. I'm like, I'll see what he thinks about slightly wilted lettuce. Arugula, excuse me, which I don't like arugula to begin with.
It's weird to explain it, but like, I don't like arugula in a salad. I like arugula like on like something on a bed of arugula, or sometimes in a sandwich, if that makes sense. Like on a burger, arugula, I don't mind that at all. Not as a salad.
Arugula is fine. It's fine. It's a vinaigrette. In
neutral.
Lettuce. It's a vinaigrette, yeah. Lettuce.
Yeah,
you can't have anything weighting arugula down. You can't have a creamy dressing on arugula.
Just ranch. It's just a simple ranch and arugula salad.
You can't do. It's got to be, but it's got to be the watery ranch. You got to do the watery ranch if it's with the arugula. But you can't have like straight out of the bottle, HV ranch, on some arugula. It completely dominates the shape of the arugula. The arugula is best when it has a glistening layer of balsamic or some sort of raspberry type vinaigrette to just trickling down the purple to green leafiness of whatever color the arugula so happens to be. But yeah, that looked disgusting. What that looked like is it looked like something like they would toss in a blender if you were at a smoothie place, like before they blended it.
Nothing worse that when it comes to food, when someone tries to stump, like dupe you into drinking some garbage fucking smoothie, that's the go-to for like a smoothie place that somebody craves. They're like, oh, this just tastes just like a chocolate milkshake. Does
my problem, like, I love smoothies and I like, I would drink them a lot more, but I've never been at a point in my life where smoothies I'm not going to go on my way for. I'm not going to alter the trajectory of my day for a fucking smoothie meal replacement, whatever. But like, if a smoothie happens to be between point A and point B for me, I'll get the smoothie. But I've never been at a point in my life where getting a smoothie has been convenient. I've always had to go out of my way to get one.
And let me be clear, there are some very good tasting like smoothies that do taste like chocolate shakes, but it's like the ones with chocolate protein powder and peanut butter. It'll be the ones where it's like, yeah, it's got beet juice, grass,
I like that though.
It's got, you know,
you like a bunch of other
arugula, yeah, spinach, and you're like, yeah, I'm sure they're tasty, but it's always that they're like, it's just like a chocolate shake. Nah, no, it's not.
I like the weird vegetable stuff too. Like the green juice and
but do you pretend it tastes like a chocolate, like it's like just as good as a chocolate milk? Yeah.
No, and you're like, I'm drinking this because it's like, you know, 280 calories and I'm trying to not eat lunch today. Like that's, you know, why I'm drinking. I'm trying.
There's a place back in Austin called Juiceland that I'm sure there's many juice lands across the world, just that name is generic, but people always say that, and I'm like, oh, do they hypnotize you to say this? They paying you? Never tasted the green juice and thought it tasted like a chocolate shake. They end up being just
bad for you. They just put like fucking almond butter in it or whatever, and they put a bunch of chocolate powder, and they're like, yeah, look, it tastes just like a chocolate shake. And then sometimes it does, but it's because it's just as unhealthy for you as a fucking chocolate shake.
Well, nothing.
There's no difference.
There's no bigger fucking smoke and mirror superfood thing than an acai bowl. Like there are some acai bowls you can have that are healthy, but oh my God, the ones where it's like, oh, it's an acai bowl. It's like, well, you have six scoops of peanut butter in there and like chocolate protein powder and Nutella.
It's like 47 grams of sugar in your healthy acai bowl.
Like, yeah, you have a small layer of acai underneath granola, chocolate, and peanut butter.
I'm going to say something super ignorant, okay? I don't believe in superfoods. I don't think it's a thing.
No, I don't think that's
ignorant. It could be a very healthy food. It sounds like a marketing term. It sounds like a bunch of marketers got together and, you know, what it's like the scene from, what's the Aaron Eckhart movie? Where like one of them was
smoking.
Yeah, one was a tobacco lobbyist, one was an arms lobbyist or whatever. It sounds like, you know, like kale got together with acai, which got together. Like, what's another food that people say?
Broccoli, cauliflower, squash, leafy greens, avocado.
All healthy foods.
Chickpeas.
I just
don't know. Chickpeas is a fucking, well, we talked about that.
Yeah, superfood? Superfood? That sounds like, yeah, that just sounds like you're
and they're always adding, right? Kale. There's always a new super, like this one I'm looking at, 44 superfoods.
Do you remember like
that's too many? Can't be that super.
Do you remember a few years ago when like I feel like all the multi-level marketing now I see are for like cosmetics companies, but I feel like a few years ago there was more multi-level marketing for like fitness and more MLM for like smoothie recipes. And that's how they used to always advertise like this I'm not going to use a particular brand name, but there was one that was, you know, they would say like it's got the superfoods in it, and people would be on Facebook and they'd be like, it's got the superfoods. And I think that's where my disdain comes from. It's like you're trying to pyramid scheme me or multi-level marketing.
It's like the what do you call it, Idiocracy, when they kept saying it's got electrolytes, it's what plants crave. And it's like, well, do you know what electrolytes are? They're like, oh, good for you though.
I'm sure there's like eight people listening to this podcast who, you know, have a PhD in you know, nutrition sciences or whatever, who are like, well, actually, like acai is a superfood because I know that's why I said it's ignorant, but I'm just saying I would try to eat healthy foods, but when I hear the word superfood, I feel like I'm being marketed.
No, I think there's a bit of where the superfood is used as a marketing tool for garbage products. And and acai bowls are one of those things. Like acai bowls, there are healthy versions of it, but the ones that people like are to die for, like, oh, it's like eating ice cream. Yeah.
I want them to take just the shittiest, like just butter and just call it like a cuck beta food or something. Like what? You know, whatever
sounds
is not like
it
like,
should be bad for you, but it's good for you. Is antioxidants? Like, doesn't oxidant sound like it would be a good thing? Like it's giving you some sort of oxygenating quality or something. That's a word, right?
Like my
it
cells
sounds like it's good.
My cells are getting the oxygen it needs.
Exactly. Like why do I want antioxidant? Oxy just in my brain sounds good for both the drug, which is very bad, but also oxygen. Sounds like a good thing.
All I know is if you haven't been eating broccoli in a while and you go on like a heavy broccoli diet, or you know, you go to the whole like chicken and broccoli meal prep thing, if you're trying to like
rest
you know,
in peace to your asshole.
Cut. Oh yeah, it's you'll have an interesting time for a while. That's for sure. I'm playing Far Cry 5 on the Xbox.
Which one is that?
It's the one where you're like the cult in like Montana.
The cult one.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's a really good one. I like the guy who plays the bad guy in that. He's really good. Great.
I guess they're about, I guess they're all kind of cults. I guess it's the one set in America.
It's the evangelical cult one.
How about no one buying the fucking Avengers game?
3 million copies.
That doesn't shock
me. They made a $70 million loss on that game.
It's been a horrible year for video games, man. Like, there have been some good video games released this year. Last of Us 2 is good, but that was kind of marred in the whole like bullshit surrounding the leak and the release on that. And then, you know, between the delay of like Cyberpunk 2077, I mean, we're getting our yearly stalwarts this week, right? We're getting Assassin's Creed, mm-hmm. We're getting Call of Duty Black Ops. I'll get Assassin's Creed. I hope it's very enjoyable, but I don't know. Like, I mean, we got Final Fantasy VII Remake, but even that, like, here's another thing that might make people mad. I didn't feel like that was a full game because it wasn't the full Final Fantasy VII game. Like, it was a full game in terms of being 40 hours, but it didn't satiate me the way it needed to. I don't know. Whatever. So we'll see. I still think I'm going to strike out in getting a next gen console in 2020. I don't see that happening.
I'm just waiting for Cyberpunk. I just want it so bad.
It'll come out 1 year.
What?
Oh, would they say December 12th or something, right?
Yeah, they're going to push that again. They should have.
That seems ripe for a that seems like they should have just said next year.
Oh, they should have pushed on Friday. When like everybody else was focused on everything else going off in the world, they should have just done like another announcement where it's like, okay, like Cyberpunk's getting released in 2021. Might be the best thing. Like, you know, crunch sucks. Like, give people time to work on it. But I won the video game. So, you know, if you're working on it, thank you for your service on the video game.
That better be the coolest fucking game ever. They're in that space now where it needs to be just.
But the thing is, it's firmly in the disappointment zone now.
Yeah,
it's been hyped up and delayed too much that it is squarely in the disappointment zone. If it would have came out in time, it'd been like a 80. I mean, if it would have came out like 3 years ago after being announced like 8 years ago or whatever, and it was just like an 80 game, it would be fine. It'd be good. It'd be like, okay, then The Witcher 3 followed it up with that. This is a pretty good game. But now with all the delays, they've just put it squarely in the disappointment zone that unless it is like, it's good. Like whatever. I remember Death Stranding last year came out a year ago. Same thing. I feel like it's in that Death Stranding zone where that was a very good game. But by the time it came out, it was like, this is what Kojima is working on, a game where you deliver shit.
Yeah, and it's exhausting as hell.
Very exhausting. I had a lot of fun with it. But yeah, I get why people are menial. Yeah. Oh, good times, man.
This episode brought to you in part by American Giant. Sounds like a movie. It's not. It's more important than ever. To support our local communities.
Undertaker character that in 2001 he got tired of.
Businesses, great time to be supporting Giant. The men and women making stuff in this country. Great time to be buying clothes that are made here. And guess what? Did you know that 1960, 95% of all clothing was made in the U.S. Today, only 3%. I didn't know that. I just learned
a lot, man.
But American Giant, they're making things better. And they do make better things as well. 100% U.S.-based supply chain. Has a relationship to factories, workers, communities, all that. And they have fantastic products. I got the website pulled up right now. Some awesome looking t-shirts. Some really great t-shirts. Some long sleeve Henleys. It's Henley season.
Mm-hmm.
The weather's even delaying Henley season. So you can go on American Giant right now and purchase some of these Henleys.
I'm telling you, man, I love Henleys, but you got to have the right body type for Henley.
Absolutely.
You got to either be skinny or you got to look like The Rock. And if you're in between, then it looks like you're wearing pajamas.
More and more and kept longer. They're built to last, these clothes. And you like hearing that. They are fantastic stuff. Henley is great. If you're a Henley person, I'm telling you, these are great Henleys. Get 15% off your first order when you use promo code LIGHTS.
You could feel it.
You could feel the soft.
You could feel the clothing.
You can feel how like the quality, you know, when you put something on and you can tell it's like just like that step above, like, and especially for me and Jeff, just so used to wearing like $2 cost of production, like H&M shirts, to go put on something like for American Giant, you could tell. So like this shirt is going to last me the next 10 years. It's a nice little reprieve from what we're used to.
15% off when you use code LIGHTS at American-Giant.com. American-Giant.com, 15% off.
Well, you got to feel the clothes and you got to say this clothes has a nice hand.
That's the closed jargon for saying like
that's the equivalent to like swirling the wine around.
Yep, and the legs on the wine, yeah. The hand of the fabric, the
earthiness to this
same thing. Yep, earthiness to this organic cotton.
All right, let's get into some news. How about this? Fantastic Beast news. Johnny Depp, done. He's out.
Who gives a fuck?
Johnny Depp will depart the Fantastic Beast franchise. We thank Johnny for his work on the film to date. Fantastic Beasts 3 is currently in production. The role of Gellert Grindelwald, I forgot that's his first name, will be recast. The film will debut in theaters now in the summer of 2022.
I don't care who's playing this role. These movies are just very disappointing.
Remember when it was actually Colin Farrell and then he became Johnny Depp?
Yep. That was the reveal at the end of the first one, and we're like, okay.
What a reveal that was.
Just do Colin Farrell. They're just going to do Colin Farrell again, right? Like, they're going to give him some makeup cash. I don't know.
Well, that was supposed to be his disguise. He was disguised as a different person. He was using Polyjuice or what have you. But who cares? These movies stink.
Yeah, Fantastic Beasts, but the movies aren't about the Beast whatsoever.
Not even a little bit. It's about nerdy Newt Gingrich or whatever his name is.
Newt's commander.
Oh, Newt Gingrich. Yeah.
It's hard to, like, I feel like it would be, you know, one is big news because it's Johnny Depp and, you know, we've kind of skirted around it, but there's been a lot of turmoil in his personal life over the last couple of years that I don't think it's worth getting into. But I do think it would be bigger news if these movies were actually good. Now, you know, like hearing this, it's kind of like, okay, well, you know, it's just like, what do you think? Like, my first thought is like, maybe write like a better movie, and maybe it was getting to the point where like now the parts of the movies like would actually like seemed like they'd be fun. We're getting there, but it kind of felt like she was writing it into like be more of a traditionally good guy versus bad guy thing, versus the first movie, which was just a romp through New York City trying to put these Fantastic Beasts back into a goddamn suitcase. I don't know. I don't really care.
A horribly uninteresting franchise. And that comes from someone like myself who enjoys Harry Potter, but man, these stink.
What was the name of the guy that, it was the guy from Balls of Fury. It was like Kowalski or something. And we kept confusing him with Josh Gad.
Yeah. Jacob Kowalski, played by,
Dan Fogler. It's like the first time I've ever remembered his name. No offense to him. That's on us.
Dan Fogler.
When's the next one coming out? Like 2024?
2022, they just said,
2022.
Right?
2022, okay, you said that.
That's a great trilogy.
Yeah. That's tough. I mean, yeah, getting delayed makes sense, I guess. Huh. Yeah.
Sick, man. Here's news that won't shock anybody. Hubie Halloween is Netflix's most popular movie of 2020.
Wow.
That's not shocking at all.
473 million views.
Yeah. I don't. There's really no numbers on this, but I mean, yeah. We knew that was going to be the case.
Yeah, but this is a weird one because it feels like they didn't promote it that much. Like it got a trailer, and maybe I just don't pay attention to it. But they like when I went to Netflix and browsed through all the stuff, the algorithm wasn't really telling me to go watch Hubie Halloween, and I never really saw it in like the now trending section of Netflix the same way I would like see. You know, everybody's talking about the Queen's Gambit now, and that's always up there. And then it got released like 3 weeks before Halloween, too. So it also doesn't shock me. It's like it's an Adam Sandler movie. Those have a very wide audience. That it would be the most streamed movie or whatever of 2020 or most popular.
The thing is, I wish we had a way to back up what they say, because Netflix can say anything and we're just forced to believe them, right? Like they could say Hubie Halloween got streamed 400 billion times and I can't say no. I can't see their back end figures on anything.
Yeah. We talked about it. Netflix is never going to give us the sauce. Never going to know. You know, like if they try to get there or they count it, but and the numbers want to go into it again because I'll just like get off on another rant. But I wonder, the thing about Hubie Halloween is like outside this podcast, like I didn't encounter a single person in my own personal life that talked about Hubie Halloween once.
You know, I actually encountered a lot, but none of them had seen it. They all asked, like, is this movie good?
Yeah, I actually know that. Now that I think about that, I don't think you and I had anyone come talk to us even at work. Usually, a movie, someone will come over and say something. Like I even had someone say something about The Lie, the one of those Blumhouse horror movies that we just refused to review. But yeah, no one ever said anything about Hubie Halloween. Even like we work with a bunch of fucking Adam Sandler stands.
And a lot of New England stands too. I think was the Lil Sass said his friends were in it or something, right?
Yeah,
I guess extras.
Our good friend Glenny Balls never said anything. He's a big Sandler guy. Never got anything about this. It's weird.
And again, I had a lot of people bringing up, but none that had seen it. They all just asked if it was good and worth watching. And I said yes to everyone. I'm like, it's not bad, but still, it's crazy.
Yeah, where do you go from here if you're Adam Sandler? What do you mean? What do you think his next project is?
The Sandlerverse. He's already teased it. He's already said, I'm interested in doing this.
Yeah, but I don't think that's his next project. I think he does.
I think he teased it. He teased it, dude. And I have a secondary theory on it in that this last month, of the month of November, all of his greatest hits all came simultaneously to streaming across like different platforms, which is something I've never seen before. I've never seen Waterboy go to streaming before. Never seen Billy Madison go to streaming before. Never seen, what was the other, Happy Gilmore went to streaming. I've never seen them on streaming, period. And I've never seen them all come out at the same time. So I think he's rearing up, all I'm saying.
It's going to be, I mean, I think you'd almost like want to get out. Like if you're Adam Sandler, you think you'd want to take a shot at a COVID movie. You kind of want to just take a try at it, right? Like making a movie.
The first to do a pandemic comedy, the first one to do it.
Yeah, like where like it's a pandemic comedy, but it's in Tahiti, and it's got all of his friends, and they're all in Tahiti enjoying a vacation. So that's what I do. Like that's what I would do to get away from like the day to day life. I would just get everybody tested. I'd do what the Kardashians did: get their own private island, film a movie there. And then I'd come back once there's a vaccine. I'd bring an Infinity Gauntlet, Happy Madison.
It's going to be him in that Bali hammock spot that like every Instagram model takes pictures at. Like first day in paradise, and it's like the little huts that are on the water with the hammocks. Yes. It looks so nice.
I've never seen like Instagram models like pose on them, but like I always like on the like. There's some like accounts I follow. It's like luxurywatches.net and. And they'll do like post a picture of that and they'll have like the emoji with the smoke out of its nose or something. And it's like if you need this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you see it there a lot.
That blue clear water with the toilet facing out like into the expansive abyss of the ocean.
Yep, exactly. That's the place.
Need this. Yeah. Instagram supermodels are just like, I need to go there to poop.
Or just the picture, those same accounts I always see, just like the picture of a guy like grabbing a girl's butt saying big mood or something like that. It's the creepiest shit.
Horny
like
facts.
Sexual gifts. Horny facts. Yeah. Horny facts and horny gifts. That was their new spiel.
God, man.
Damn, I miss her. Hashtag horny gifts.
the funniest thing to me always was when the Tom Bro dude had beef with the Uberfax account because the Uberfax account was so shitty. And like this was back before, this is like 2014 or whatever. Uberfax would tweet out, it's like 3,000 people a day eat a peanut butter sandwich with radishes. And then he would just be like, I'm going to find you and I'm going to run you over with a lawnmower.
What a fucking terrible account Uberfax is.
Oh my God.
Rest in peace,
Tom. Yeah.
What a king
it was. So funny. But although, I mean, that person who ran the Uberfax, like it was like a profile, they made a lot of money off of just the most Uber effect. So they got the last laugh, I guess.
They're still around.
This episode brought to you in part by Armor Lock. That's right. G Technologies Armor Lock encrypted MMVME SSD solid state drive is fantastic. Armor Lock. They let us try one out. I'll tell you what, I've been loving throwing our Mandalorian stuff on there. It's fantastic. Comes with an app. Simple for anyone to use. You can unlock the drive with your phone. Keeps it really safe. You won't lose anything. I imagine you have much... There are people out there listening who have much greater things to protect in a hard drive than us, like a couple Baby Yoda clips. But, it's nice to have that, even for us. It's nice to have that ability to keep things secure. No more remembering passwords or downloading software. Just open the Armor Lock app on your phone. or your MacBook, your PC, whatever, tap the button to unlock and off you go. You can send it to people, make sure no one's able to get into it until the drive arrives. You set the whole thing up with a little QR code in the back of it. You no longer have to compromise speed for security. ArmorLock delivers both simultaneously, ensuring you to get the high-grade security you deserve with the pro-grade speeds your workflow demands. Tossed on a bunch of gigs right on that drive really quick as I was leaving on Friday night. No worries, no issues. Lock the thing, good to go. The ArmorLock SSD is built to withstand the rigors of travel, being shipped or accidentally dropped. It's ultra-rugged for max durability and reliability. No passwords necessary. Just tap the button inside the app to unlock or lock. In-field software updates push through the app to keep the drive up to date. Self formats as well. Trill, if you want to go with the FAT formation or format for a hard drive?
Yeah, FAT32. All day.
What's the other one? NSFT?
I think it's NTFS. Or that's NSFW. Just Need for Speed Underground.
Great game.
My favorite file format. Yep.
Big file format guy.
You ever used to get like one of the flash drives and then you put it in your Mac and then it wouldn't work in the Mac and you had to go in and like reformat the flash drive? That was the worst.
No.
Easy format with this SSD here.
Got an easy format. SSDs are the best, man.
Because Western Digital manufactures their own flash technology and SSDs, you can be confident that their products are built from the ground up with specifically selected elements to create the best, most consistent product experience. Again, authorize remote users to use the drive before you ship it. It's awesome. Get to armorlock.com to learn more and get yours. All right, next thing. Boba Fett spinoff apparently going to be happening. Not very shocking. A spinoff is in the work for Disney Plus, according to Deadline. Going to be shooting it imminently. You figure this is where they're going to probably tell the story of Boba Fett a little more, how he got to where he is. Troy, what did you think about the new episode? Did you watch?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I liked the that episode kind of just felt like let's make some puppets, and I really enjoyed.
Yeah, we went into it. This is my least favorite episode they released yet. I love the side quest stuff. We talked about it on here last week extensively. Like if this isn't your type of thing for the show, I just don't think you're going to like the show. That's absolutely fine. It's a campy Flash Gordon-y type side quests. And I mean, it's a lot like a video game, which you guys have mentioned before. And the cool small stories are great. They just have to be good. And I felt like this one was a little flat, a little dull at times. Like I don't mind the side story, but you got to make sure it's still good. It's up to a good quality. It was still fine. It was very enjoyable. I enjoyed it, but yeah,
it just not wasn't satisfying at all. It wasn't what you wanted to see. It was enjoyable in a way that was like kind of cool to see, like the frog lady. Like I enjoyed the frog lady, but it seemed
the
like
dog fight was cool. The chase scene was cool.
Yeah, but the whole episode was just like, hey, like what if we just did another thing where we just showed how fucking disgusting Baby Yoda actually is?
and people are really growing.
The thing is with all these episodes. Sorry, go ahead.
No, they're growing tired of Amy Sedaris. Notice that.
People, I think that was since two episodes ago. That wasn't just a this episode.
Yeah, but thing. Now it's like now people are they're like, all right, this character, let's get rid of this character.
It's like two shades too much Amy Sedaris.
It's just a little too corny. She's a little too corny.
Satisfying episode the entire time, like especially near the end, you're waiting for a setup as to what's going to happen in the next one. But the entire episode was side quest, you know like there's just
one. See, like I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. I just like I'm okay with that if it's like really cool and awesome. Like again, the Mando side quest with the Bill Burr character last year, that really didn't move the story much at all. He just hopped around to another place, but that was fucking badass. That was awesome.
The funny thing was they did one thing that like took me out of it, where it was about like bringing the crate dragon meat back. And then I think Amy Sedaris's character was like, I want mine medium rare. And then that got me thinking, like, does medium rare exist in the Star Wars universe? Like, how come it's specifically medium rare? Like that's a very specific, like cultural terminology. Like food cultural terminology. And I know it's like not supposed to be an exact translation, but I did like that did send me off like on a little tangent where I'm like, oh, how they land on medium rare there? Like,
I mean, what? Han says, I'll see you in hell. So that implies that hell exists in the Star Wars universe. There's a whole bunch of that sort of shit.
I mean, they're only starting to talk about pissing and shit in
Star Wars.
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed that. Other than, you know, it's better than J.K. Rowling's explanation of pissing and shitting in Harry Potter. Bullshit.
Yeah, disappeared it. Yeah.
Just, it'd be funny if, like, you were the best droid creator in the galaxy, but you made your droids piss and shit. And it was just a big nuisance that, like, everybody had to deal with, like, keeping a dog. But, like, 3PO, 3C, whatever his name is, he has to piss and shit all the time.
Yeah, why not? They do. That's how the androids work in, like, Ridley Scott universe.
Yeah.
They have, like, blood.
Yeah. And like, aliens, remember when... what was an alien's name? Got torn apart and had all like the white intestines with the bubble and the balls coming out.
Well, that's an android. There's the android, yeah.
It's Bishop. And they gave him guts. They gave Bishop them guts.
That's the go-to if you want to show in a sci-fi movie that a robot's dying. You show the quote-unquote hydraulic fluid leaking, which is like AKA blood. That's how they do it.
Oh my. R2, I need to duty. That wasn't funny.
That was Star Wars rep. Remember that?
Yeah, I didn't like
the joke
that.
There.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't feel good.
We're an entertainment pod, so last thing here, can't go without mentioning big rest in peace to Alex Trebek. That was a sad one today. That kind of caught me off guard. I think, True, you said it to us best. It's, you knew things were not good for him, but it just, the fact that he came back kind of strong and was still filming, you're like, whoa.
Yeah, I mean, that's I don't know a whole lot about, I think it was, he was sick with pancreatic cancer, I believe.
Yeah.
Which is, from my limited medical knowledge, I know it is the most nefarious of cancers because of how undetectable it is to a certain end stage. And, you know, they diagnosed it and he, you know, received treatment, but you know, with that sort of thing, it's like beyond a certain point, it's just about prolonging life. And, you know, I don't want to get into that all that very much, but yeah, it was disorienting because you know you saw him come back and approach it head on and be very positive about a diagnosis that, like, I would just, you know, I would be like, I'm gonna quit my job, I'm gonna fucking die. But you know, he went back to work and was a presence for a lot of people still, even when he was sick and probably, you know, didn't feel all that great. So he kind of knew, you know, at some point, you know, unfortunately, like that sort of disease is pretty unfair with how quickly it can take somebody's life. So we kind of knew it was coming, but I think it was something that, like, you know, just in terms of what we wanted as a culture, just plugged our collective ears and covered our eyes and kind of just said, no way that can happen. And I know that's what I did. And yeah, I probably watch Jeopardy like two or three times a week. That's a show I like a lot of people like a lot, but you know, there's also a lot of people who never miss an episode. And it's just a really rabid fan base for a game show. And I think, like, one of the big things about the success of that show, and the big thing, actually, I should say, is that I don't think it would have been as successful without a host like Alex Trebek. And I think for some extent you saw that with The Price is Right with Bob Barker. And Drew Carey's fine, but Bob Barker kind of was The Price is Right. And I think you're going to see that with Jeopardy, where the show will still exist, but it just won't be the same thing because Alex Trebek was Jeopardy. So rest in peace, fixture that has been around literally my entire life. And it is kind of tough to see it, you know, as a bystander. Obviously it's not as tough as losing the immediate loved one, but you know, you are kind of saying a goodbye to a familiar presence, and you know, that's never fun. Right.
Yeah, and one of the last, I would say, like, ubiquitously loved celebrities that, like, in the world, like, people, you could find someone that can hate almost any other celebrity in the world. You'd be very fucking hard pressed to find someone that disliked Alex Trebek, just universally loved across the spectrum by everybody. I think probably the most iconic game show host of all time. I would say, like, I think KFC said it, like, no one was better singularly at their job than Alex Trebek was at hosting Jeopardy. And I would agree with that. I mean, he was the fucking master at what he did, and he made learning look cool. He made being, like, knowing shit look cool. Me and Jeff do trivia every single fucking day, so this is something we obviously love. So he's a great guy. We'll miss him tremendously.
I think with the game show, you have to walk that tightrope between being an authority figure, but also not, like, being too involved in the game. And by authority figure, I just mean, like, I thought what Alex Trebek brought to the table was obviously, like, this air of intelligence, but the way he kind of the way he kind of managed the game, and you know, when people got answers wrong or when they got it right, you know, it was it flowed really well. It's tough to explain. It wasn't disruptive. It made sense. It's hard to put it into words, but it's hard to see someone. And I hope that show goes on because I want to see someone else do it. But it's hard to imagine someone else doing it.
I imagine Ken Jennings will probably replace him. That'd be my guess.
Which, yeah, you know, which he deserves a chance, and I think he'll do fine. It's probably something that takes five seasons to get good at. Like, I remember when Drew Carey first started, I thought he was pretty good. Bob Barker just had that presence. Is that the same thing Alex Trebek had, where they just seamlessly fit into their own shows because they were those shows? I don't know, man. I did make a comment to the group chat today that was like, this would be something I thought Darren Rovell would tweet. And immediately get piled on and ratioed for, but it's like in my like stupid brain, like I do think it's, you know, it's pretty like, I don't know, it's sad, but like also like I think about like one of the big, you know, funniest things when I was growing up was the Jeopardy SNL skit, and you know, there was the interplay between the, you know, the fictional Alex Trebek played by Will Ferrell, and then the Daryl Hammond, Sean Connery, and then the Burt Reynolds played by Norm Macdonald, and they were all brilliant because they're all just very clever caricatures of the celebrities that they parody, which I don't think you really get on SNL anymore. speaking very specifically at the man holding the Maui inspired, "What can I say except you're welcome?" note at the end of the show. But all three of those, you know, actors and celebrities and institutions have passed away, with Sean Connery and Burt Reynolds and Alex Trebek, obviously. So that's not a significant thought, but it is, you know, it is something like my brain immediately went to, and it's like, that's something I'd never say out loud. I don't know why I'm saying it right now, but it, you know, it's sad because that was one of the funniest fucking things when I was a teenager.
Yeah, not just you who thought that either. I mean, let's be clear. Definitely not.
No, it's an original thought. Only person in the world to think that.
We're not talking about SNL. Sorry. Not happening.
I don't want to talk. There's no more SNL chat.
Passing on that.
Society has progressed past the need for SNL chat.
There was one skit that I did watch because it's Dave Chappelle and he did like a stand-up routine, but there was one skit that I did laugh at.
Was it the Count Chocula one?
Yeah, it's Count Chocula got me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was like, I always go through the SNL website to just kind of like overview the skits. And that was the one I immediately clicked on.
Yeah.
Because that one,
by the way, well, so we don't talk about it. I'm cutting us off. Chappelle's Show is on Netflix now though.
And on HBO Max as well.
Yeah. But that skit kind of felt like, I mean, obviously it wasn't handled as well as like a Chappelle Show skit was, but it did feel like a successor to something you would see on the Chappelle Show.
Correct. Yeah. I'm excited. Yeah, I know it's on H, but like you feel like with it on Netflix, it's like obviously
it's like being on TV, basically.
Yeah, more. Also, Most Extreme Elimination Challenge dropped a handful of episodes on.
We were just Amazon fucking Prime. Sitting there, right? And I don't remember what I was looking for on Amazon Prime, but we were sitting at work on Friday. I'm like, holy shit, MXC is on fucking Amazon Prime, and they didn't advertise this at all. It's only the first 13 episodes, but man, they're still fucking funny.
One of those is as funny as, yeah, even one episode of those is as funny as anything on fucking TV.
Mm-hmm.
So good. All right, let's talk about Money Plane. So we're going to play some clips from this as well.
What's the jumping end point on Money Plane?
I don't know, but let's explain. Okay.
Yeah.
For his final heist, an indebted professional thief must rob a futuristic airborne casino filled with the world's most dangerous criminals. Stars Edge, the wrestler, Thomas Jane's in the movie, Kelsey Grammer, Denise Richards, a little Housewives of Beverly Hills connection there for those who watch those shows.
For 2 seconds. What a fucking pull by her.
Mm-hmm. And then most notably, also, let's just get one of these out of the way. Al Sapienza is in this movie, who plays the fucking, the teachers union boss who punches Frank Underwood in the face.
That's a Mikey Grabbag from Sopranos Lovers as well. I love him. He's been showing up in more stuff lately.
Yeah, I forgot that he was in this movie because I watched this movie a while ago. I'd seen it a while ago. I said, we just got to do Money Plane. You guys need to see when you talk about it. But I forgot. We had just talked about this the other day, right? When he punched him.
It was because Woody called it. I did something with Money Plane where I looked up the GIF and I think I sent it to you and we were like, why have we not reviewed this? Right. Cause I think I pulled up the clip where Kelsey Grammer says Money Plane and I forget what I did it for, but then all the Money Plane executives started favoriting our shit as well.
Yeah. I tweeted it the other day. Yeah. Well, okay. So let's get to the people who are involved with this movie behind the making of it and why they're significant. If you're from the '90s, you know the name Lawrence and you immediately associate it with three people, Matthew Lawrence, Andrew Lawrence, Joey Lawrence. Well, they're all involved in the movie. Andrew Lawrence directed the movie. He's also in it. Joey Lawrence is in it. And so is Matthew Lawrence, which I feel like if you explain this movie to somebody who's around our age and knows who the Lawrence brothers are, if you explain the movie and you say Kelsey Grammer's in it, that right there is going to get a Kelsey Grammer, like a, in a B movie, like a B heist movie. And they say, well, so are the three Lawrence brothers. That'll raise an eyebrow. This movie, again, came out in July. There you go. There's one big question with this movie. How is this serious, or did they know what they were making? That's the big takeaway. And I'll reference Red Letter Media. They did a review on it. I don't want to try to make it sound like I'm taking some of their observations. So when I reference something they talked about, theirs is a must watch as well. I will reference it. But they had the same question at the end. They're like, I don't know if this was seriously made, because there did seem to be some people taking this very seriously, or if it was a joke. There's a couple things, in my opinion, that would lead me to believe that this is like a VelociPastor type thing. Maybe not to that extent. There's a couple scenes, and we'll talk about them, where I think they had some awareness here. I think they wanted this to be a really bad movie. And yeah, like you said, Ken Jack, I think they're aware of our review incoming. No personal digs, but it's just a bad movie. Whether that was the intention or not is something for us to discuss here. But it is a bad movie. It is quite the fucking experience. It is laugh out loud funny at times for how ridiculous it is and for some of the things that happen. Look, I gave it a 3 out of 100. It's a bad, it's a terrible movie. It's an awful movie. Just in terms of like what it is, but I would recommend this movie be something that you watch. I would recommend watching this movie. There are so many funny things to discuss with the movie. Trill, you took a lot of notes, and when you guys need the clip played, I have all three clips that we want queued up.
We're about to have the biggest score differential in our entire podcast history.
Oh,
I give this movie 70 out of 100. Look, it's not a good movie, but this movie is a fucking blast. Like, I don't think it matters whether they're taking it seriously or not, but part of me says they weren't taking it seriously because it was so fun. And it also is like less than 90 minutes. It's a very short movie as well, but there's so much funny shit in here. And the thing that says that I thought they were in on the joke, and this is, I think, one of the greatest characters and one of the funniest characters in cinematic history is Matthew Lawrence's cowboy.
Mustache and everything is amazing.
The Matthew Lawrence cowboy to me and the entire Russian roulette sequence that happens where they're wearing the tarps.
Yep.
That was the time where I'm kind of like, this is fucking clever. Like they know what they're doing. And so I kind of believe, and look, it really ultimately doesn't matter, but I think this is something I would recommend, like, just go watch. It's like a really breezy watch, but I took a lot of notes because I was having so much fucking fun when I was watching it.
Break it down.
Okay. So there's a lot of like, so Rick and Morty, the TV show, which I talk
let's
about.
Let's start.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I talk about it a lot. They did an episode in this last season, which, Dan Harmon will go on these like almost like episodic rants on like movie tropes or whatever. They did a heist episode, which kind of went after heist movies in terms of like what happens in a heist movie and how they usually play out and all that shit. Obviously, I don't think he likes a heist movie. We obviously like a heist movie on this one. The movie opens up with like, just pitch perfect, like kind of just like generic music of like just that suave generic music with like the Edge's voiceover, which the Edge sounds like, he sounds like Jesse the Body Ventura in this movie. I love it. Like he's from he's from Toronto or it's, I think something. Jesse Ventura, obviously from Minneapolis. If you're from Indiana, indistinguishable, right? The voiceover, but then it's like the down or whatever it is. And it's like really suave. And he's like undercover. But the funniest thing is like, if I'm undercover, I'm not going with the man bun. Because I like the man bun. If you have that hair, then rock the man bun. I think that's a good look, especially if you got like the Edge's look where you have a very chiseled face. Works fine. But people remember the man bun. Like that's a very distinctive hairstyle. Every time you see a man bun, you're like, that's a man bun. At least I do. So like if you're going to do that, like I just kind of liked it because the Edge obviously sticks out. But he got the voiceover and he's like, well, there's three critical parts of every heist is one, you need the crew. And, you know, kind of does the whole like, you know, guy in van type crew deal and whatever. And then it starts getting into like, you know, like that's a very tangible thing. But then it goes more like it's more theoretical now. And then he goes, the second thing is how things are versus how they appear. And then I was just like, what the fuck does that mean?
It makes no sense. There's no barrier. Like it's like you said, the first thing is such a regular heist movie thing, like for the checklist. But the second one is so it's like philosophical, right? Like, yeah. The first one is it's so like real, but
They explained it. The number three was like the way they explained it in the movie is like have a plan A and have a plan B, which is you could easily just say just have a backup plan.
It was your plan A is only as good as your plan B. Is that it?
Yeah,
that was it.
Which I enjoyed. Like I enjoyed that because it starts off like you're like I'm into this. Like the crew, okay, got it. Like the next thing he's gonna say is like the explosives guy in the crew or like the you know like guns or whatever, and he just goes how things are versus how things appear. And like that just blew my mind because I'm just sitting there. I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? And they show it like the painting, you know, they have a feed that obviously, you know, the painting goes away and all that shit. But I love that. That opens it up. Obviously, the job doesn't go well. Whatever. Like, you know, the Edge is pretty bummed. We know another trope of the heist movie is like he's obviously like this well-meaning guy with his family back home. And he's looking for the final job, right? He wants out of the game. That's the thing with the heist game. Like, I just need one more job. Like, I'm out. I got a family or whatever.
And he owes money. Yeah.
He owes money. I got a family. I owe money. So, like, I'm following. I'm like, this is a parody of a heist movie. I love it. And I'm sorry if it wasn't a parody, but you did a good parody. And I think you should be proud of that. And that's why I gave the movie a 70. Then the first kind of thing you cut over the Kelsey Grammer introduction, right? I'm going to turn it over to you guys because
the rumble.
Well, let me play the clip. I would highly suggest watching this movie, by the way, if you're listening to this. I'll play the clip. I should probably share the clip. I almost played it without sharing it. Hang on. Okay, here we go.
Darius Emmanuel Grouch, the third.
It's the worst name.
Better known as the Rumble. I am very disappointed.
Oh, and he nails it. Like Kelsey Grant, like you see that little smile after he said the Rumble. He's like the Rumble. Mm-hmm. He was like that. That's like you should know who I am. But the thing about this scene that's fucking brilliant is he's introducing himself, but Edge's character knows who this guy is.
Yeah,
he's working for this guy, right? Yes. Like he knows the Rumble,
aka.
What
Rumble?
What's the point of having the alias?
Nickname is the Rumble.
He has IBS. But no,
beyond that, why even introduce yourself with the alias if you're going to give him your first fucking full name and social security number as your introduction anyway? What's the point of having the alias?
I think that's brilliant. I think there's no point, but it's just like that's the thing is like that's all these heist movies is like you're introduced to the big bad, but his name ends up being Darius Grouch, the third.
The third, don't forget.
And then you're like, oh, that's a ludicrous name. And you get this pause And his Kelsey Grammer smile where he's like, the Rumble.
I love it.
Hello, my name is Mark Darius Felt the Third, a.k.a. Deep Throat. It's like, well, you kind of fucking ruined your cover there, bro. But I agree with you in that. It's okay. A brilliant parody right there.
So the name is the first hint that this isn't serious. Darius Emmanuel Grouch the Third is the and then just the necessary end.
Where did Emmanuel come from?
A.k.a.
Grouch. The Grouch.
My parents were very big fans of Sesame Street, which was clearly not out yet when I was born.
And then shortly after that,
Rumblecore.
He talks about the money plane, which
yeah, the clip
is this is the part that we've shared on social and is yes. The part people talk about most.
Some of the baddest motherfuckers on the planet are on that plane, all craving action. Whatever you want to wager on, the money plane has you covered. You want to bet on a dude fucking an alligator? Money plane.
The way he says money plane, he holds the M on it. Money plane.
It is one of my favorite clips I've ever seen from movie, and I'm not kidding. I, ever since watching this movie, I have said countless, I've said on this podcast, we didn't even talk about it, I was just, money plane. It's just the way he delivers that line is so funny.
The only disappointment out of that is we didn't see anything as outlandish as a dude fucking an alligator in the actual money plane. Yeah,
not even close. The Russian roulette was the craziest thing that happened on that plane.
A man versus a cobra. And like compared to that introduction, that's rather tame. But like that whole thing is like it's like being hit in the gut with a baseball bat. It just takes your breath away when you're listening to that dialogue. I love it. And I'm being serious right now. I'm not
fucking a crock.
I'm not forcing myself to really. I legitimately had a blast watching this shit.
No, I don't disagree with you at all. It was very fun. And I agree with you. I also believe that there was an essence of parody about it. And if there wasn't, then it's very subconsciously well done parody because it is hilarious. And I agree with you that it's fun and it feels quick, right? Like you don't feel like you wasted your time after you're done with money playing. I feel like you had fun.
Yeah, but they nail the whole like meeting the big bad thing, right? Where you know he's got this lavish whatever, and you walk in, he's doing that like
just a terrace. You never get to see the whole house.
Yeah, he's always outside on the terrace eating crudités, and then doing the whole lighting a cigar while holding the cigar in your mouth thing, like covering like with the wind, and then like that's a badass look. I loved it.
Yep.
But that transition. So we get the introduction to the money plane, and then
don't forget though, he introduces his number one man, P. Roach, which was another sign that this was also parody. Is that his body guy was P. Roach?
Do you think that stands for Papa Roach?
That's what the first thing that I thought of. I'm like, this is a Papa Roach reference. This has to be fake.
So that cuts, no way. That cuts to this is another thing that I'm just like, they nailed it. It cuts to a warehouse planning. Now, I get that like the warehouse could be a very effective place to plan a heist because you can build a set for the heist, right? If you get the acrobatics guy in there and they're the diamond room, you can build a one-for-one replica of the diamond room so he can or she can rehearse with their dance around the lasers to the diamond room. We didn't get anything that cool. They're just in a warehouse on a crate, like that. The whole shot, right? Unless I'm mistaken, the whole scene is just them talking around a crate, and it's not that big of a crew either.
No, relatively small crew.
No, it's like five people.
Relatively small plane too. Now the plane they show is a massive plane, but the actual plane that you get to see is very small. And you reminded me of. Do you remember that Instagram thing that went viral a couple weeks ago where people were exposed for not actually having a private plane? Yeah, it's like this. It's like this set that people use to show that they have like a private jet. That's what it reminded me of because it's a very small cabin. It's an incredibly tiny plane.
It's also like the way it was filmed is there's like a plane set, but then everything's surrounded by curtains. So you never really question what's behind the curtain. You just say, the rest of the plane's behind the curtain. But it could have been filmed in like the Orlando Westin ballroom.
Even them boarding the money plane, like the private section where they board, like the exclusive VIP boarding, it's just like it's a bunch of show curtains.
It looks like backstage at WWE.
I was going to say it looked like the entrance to laser tag.
Yes.
The funniest fucking part of the entire movie, and sorry to swear, but when they get to the scene where they board the plane there's text on the screen that says, let me find it. there's text on the screen. Money Plane Terminal.
Yeah, undisclosed location.
Undisclosed location. Now, that's brilliant because there's no fucking reason to say undisclosed location unless you're just being an asshole to the viewer. Because the characters in the movie know where the location is. The people operating the money know where the money plane know where the location is. There's no reason to say undisclosed location, because if they're going to the money plane, then the location is disclosed to them. You're just hiding information from the viewer to be an asshole. And I thought that was so funny.
It's amazing.
They have the lava lamp on the bar in one scene, like the lavish bar. I mean, there's enough things that will point you to it being fake, like bad on purpose. But I always caution saying that, because that gives them a lot of credit. Like, that's super satirical. That's the Tommy Wiseau thing. How like they've made it try to seem like Tommy Wiseau, like knew what he was making, blah blah blah. That whole Tommy Wiseau phenomenon. I'm not saying the Lawrence Brothers are that, but like I think there's some signs that this could have been intentional. But even some of like the who stole the cookie from the cookie jar, like that whole fucking back and forth with like the goon. There's some of those from like, well, that's just so bad that I don't know if that is intentional. That just seems like a really, like you're trying to be campy, maybe not like bad funny, but like campy, and it just didn't play. But then there's other things as well that were like, even the way like the dealer is dealing the cards in poker and shuffling the decks, it's so bad where I'm like, maybe that's intentional. It kind of threw my brain for a loop. And that's why I know it's a low score, because it's truly terrible, but it is, it's a funny bad. Well, it's definitely funny.
But even the people going on the money plane was like you would expect that out of all the cliches we've seen of not just from heist movies, but just from movies where it's like a group of like, you know, criminals all together. And you have the criminal cowboy, which they fucking nailed. You have like the, you know, like Russian guy or whatever. And then, you know, what was the other one? Like there's some, you know, some more tropes they had there, like just in terms of like, you know, all the bases.
Yakuza boss number one.
Yeah. All the bases were covered from the standpoint of having like, you know, worldwide representation in terms of all the, you know, the biggest and baddest criminals joining together in international airspace, which I don't think technically that's not true. I don't think you can kill people and say you're in international airspace. It's got to be someone's airspace, right?
I don't think you can kill people in general and just say, yeah, we're in international waters.
I don't know.
No crime, no foul.
I've never tried.
But you know, as another, I think one of the big signs, by the way, that this is parody was just the fact that the movie is named Money Plane and not something like the XYZ heist or like, you know, Redemption Recovery or something like that, because that's what all those bad movies are named. I think that literally just the title Money Plane alone is a giveaway. And I think another thing you're leading into with the crime syndicate was a giveaway in that they gave the guy the code name McGillicuddy and said he was Irish, even though he had an American accent, which was laugh out loud hilarious. And they all kept referencing it over and over and over again. Like the what do you call it, Mikey Grabbag guy, kept going, oh, the look of the Irish guy over here. What a great job. You like that back in Ballyfermot Island? And like they just kept referencing it. Like it was not a problem. And he had an Irish passport, which made it even funnier.
And I also love like the implication, like when you know, the Russian guy or whatever it was, I think it was him. He was like, you know, he was trying to buy like the stewardesses or you know, the attendants or the service members of the crew. And that was Joey Lawrence, right? The mastermind guy, the concierge or whatever. It was like, you know,
concierge of crime. Yeah.
Yeah. Concierge. Then he does not say concierge. Yeah,
so like one, like shout out to them, because they're very protective of their own workforce, which I think is very admirable. But then they bring in like, you know, the hookers, right? I don't mean, look, I
ladies of the night.
Yeah, I mean,
ladies of the flight.
But that the whole, all those criminals were amazed by it. Like they've never, like you're that deep in the criminal.
They've never seen a woman in their life. They've never seen a woman in life. It was so
like,
funny.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Holy shit, this is so cool.
Check that out. Look at the boobies.
A girl sat on his lap, the fake big cat guy. She sat on his lap and he's like, holy shit, you ever seen anything like this? It was the funniest thing. He'd never seen a woman before.
When, when he punches the waiter just to punch him, the waiter's like, oh no.
Ow! And he like ran. He ran up like fucking Urkel. It was so funny. willy-nilly shooting guns in a pressurized cabin, also very funny in this movie. I was a big fan of that.
So
there's so many good things. And the one thing I think was that stood out, another parody thing, was the fact that the sound design was so out, like in your face bad. Like they would punch someone and be like, big wind up punch, gunfire.
That's my thing is that I just like that is giving a lot of credit. And maybe they did do this like this beautiful parody of like a money, you know, like a plane heist movie, but that's giving a like.
I don't know.
So many bad things that it makes me question like how serious it is.
Yeah, but look,
handgun on the drone though.
Process versus outcome. I'm judging on the outcome. I don't give a shit what the process was.
Yeah,
they got to where they got to, and I loved it. And I know I keep saying this was the funniest part of the movie. I don't think it was the funniest part of the movie, but like the fact that Edge spent half the movie flying the plane.
Well, I know
he's a lead character.
And you're waiting for him like, you're like, okay, he's gonna have a scene where he like, you know, kicks some ass or
he's
whatever.
Gonna kick ass, yeah.
He's gonna kick ass. You're just waiting for him to kick ass, and it never happens because he's flying the plane.
Well, here I know
flies
you want
to flying.
You want to play the scene where he gets yelled at by yes. Darius Manuel Grouch. Here you go.
What if you were actually just a little bitch? And what if this money wasn't actually yours anymore?
Are you really fucking with me right now? Are you fucking with me?
You think you're badass, yeah? The criminals on this plane would eat you alive. On this plane, you're a dime a dozen, Colonel.
I don't give a fuck who's on that plane. I'm the baddest motherfucker on the planet. I am Darius Grouch III, the Rumble, and I am taking down the money plane. Now bring me my money!
No. Did he not pronounce it Darius at the start of the movie, and then this one he just says Darius?
Darius.
Now I don't remember.
To back it up.
But sure, I'm sure he did.
So at this point, like, you know, when Andrew, was it Andrew Lawrence?
Which of the Lawrence?
Who directed it?
Andrew Lawrence directed. He's also the guy on the ground. Yeah.
Yeah. So Andrew Lawrence at this point is just telling Kelsey Grammer, is like, hey, have you seen Scarface? Kelsey Grammer's like, in his mid-Atlantic, you know, voice is like, yeah, of course I've seen Scarface before.
Of course I've seen Scarface.
Yeah, I've seen Scarface. He's like, do that. Just do that. Do that the rest of filming. Just do Tony Montana.
Now, did you catch the in the server? So anything in the server room in this movie is hilarious to me. With the female Isabella, when she just these are two things Red Letter Media know, which I love, that she just continued to seduce and kill multiple people the same way over and over again.
Like ten times in the same room.
But when the fight with McGillicuddy and one of the goons, this happens, which this is visual, but I'm going to play the guys a clip. I don't know if they've seen it. So watch this here. He gets punched. McGillicuddy gets punched. Then he gets thrown into the servers. Keep an eye here on the left side of the screen. A CD drive opens up. There. So the servers are clearly old stereo systems, and a CD drive opens up. And you see that? Okay, so that's a white CD. Still in the bottom left. Bottom left, there's a character with a shadow. That is actually a Bare Naked Ladies CD.
Again, Red Letter Media figured that out.
Red Letter Media figured that out. That I when I first so that's like I was howling when I first saw that, because that's another
parody.
Maybe like, what are the chances? Did they really they again, if it is, I take back anything bad I said about this movie. But if they really timed it so a Bare Naked Ladies CD drive opened up, but like, I don't know. It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous movie.
It's been
usually good.
1 week.
That you stole from me. They throw all the money out of the. Oh my god, the money out of the plane when they just toss it out. Like, yeah, it'll go to all the people.
Yeah, it'll get donated. Yeah, they're going to donate all the money. Yeah.
And then
the digitally, yes, but they just threw the cash out of the window of the plane. Like, what the fuck is that gonna do?
I love it so much.
There's so many funny things to this movie, dude. It was the ending was out loud hilarious when like they send the crew to the house and Kelsey Grammer just goes, "You wanna fuck with me?" and just starts shooting at them with the yappa after killing P. Roach, poor guy.
Why did he kill P. Roach? Because P. Roach said he was out.
Yeah, P. Roach is like, I'm out of here.
All right, hang on a second. Then he comes back and just shoots him. Well,
one more thing, P. Roach.
So
he shoots him in the head.
The only thing that would have, I mean, this would have been too obvious. Like, I think this would have been a tip. I don't know what they were trying to do. I think part of the brilliance of this movie itself is you don't know if it's, they walk that line so much that you don't know. You really don't know. But if they would have done this, it would have tipped it. And if there would have been an after credit scene of Kelsey Grammer's character coming out of rubble, like after with just covered in blood, would have been fucking brilliant. But it would have tipped it because that would have been obviously in on it.
To be continued ? At the end of it. Oh, that also reminded me of the fact that Tom Jane's character wore a 3-piece suit at all times and also had a pipe that he would just smoke religiously throughout all of his scenes, which I thought was another kind of giveaway for the parody, because like you don't make a character smoking a fucking corncob pipe without intent for it being parody. He was wearing like Wayfarers as well, I believe. And the drone with the gun and the fight in the asphalt patch of like the outerlying municipality of like some Toronto place wherever they filmed this, that was also to me hilarious. Like, yeah, this is the spot, the server spot you need to be at, random man. And when they all get ambushed in like just a pile of rocks, like it was, that part was so funny.
And so to steal someone else's content, did Red Letter Media note anything? Because those, I mean, they're brilliant, right? So
in August. Yeah, I hate just consistently talking about another review, but theirs is kind of what helped this movie blow up. So I feel obligated. And like they follow us on Twitter, and I don't want to make it seem like that way. I would love to ever do something with them. By the way, they're not big collab guys, but because they don't have to, because they're fucking hilarious. But yes. But what were you asking? What did they?
Well, did they note anything like the bare naked ladies thing that you want to add on? Like that?
No, they didn't. So I actually think somebody in their post-production team noted it because they mentioned that a CD drive opened and then they pause and then they show the CD, like the production team.
What did they feel? Did they feel like it was intentionally?
They didn't know by the end of it. Yeah. They really couldn't tell. Mike really couldn't tell.
It's kind of, that's part of the brilliance, I think.
Yeah.
70.
Yeah. I mean, they both recommended it. Mike and Jay both recommended it, but they didn't have like anywhere to land on with it.
Money plane.
I mean, it's my favorite. It's one of my favorite delivered lines ever in a movie. It hits such a perfect way. Money plane.
Where did we all fall on this again? Troll 70.
I don't know what you gave it, Ken Jack. Jeff gave it a 3.
He gave it a 50.
It's 50. Three for me. 50 for Ken Jack. 70 for Troll. Audience gave it a 35.
We're all sure. We kind of spread out a little bit. I think that worked.
I know the people behind the wheel are listening. It is bad, and if it was intentional, then I fucking applaud you. And if it wasn't, whatever, you made a movie and I didn't make a movie. But I very much applaud you if it was intentional, because if the bare naked ladies CD thing was by design, that's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in a movie. Plain and simple.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
I just don't think it was. I don't think
it
was.
Canadian too?
The Lawrences?
Bare Naked Ladies. I'm pretty sure the Bare Naked Ladies. I think pretty sure the Bare Naked Ladies are Canadian.
Yeah, the Lawrences are those are American made brothers.
Bare Naked Ladies are in fact Canadian. Good call on me. And as is The Edge. Or not The Edge, sorry.
Not The Edge. The Edge is Irish.
Edge.
Is The Edge Irish?
Great combo.
The Edge?
Yes.
The Edge
is definitely Irish.
Well, they're an Irish rock band, but I just wanted to make sure The Edge wasn't like...
Yeah, like joined the band later and he's actually from Utah.
That's
like from Finland.
Yeah, British-Irish musician. British-born Irish musician.
I don't know. I don't want to get into it. I like their... It might get loud with The Edge and
Yeah, Robert talked Plant about that on radio because PFT routinely clowns U2. and the Edge, not in like a UT's
Paul David
band of all time, but he likes the Paul David Houston is Bono's real name.
I remembered.
Yeah, now you do. But yeah, no, they Mikey Allow the beginning is a very, very cool music, a little music thing they do. The whole documentary is cool. Uno, dos, tres.
No, it's great. The ending of the movie, I almost forgot when like the guy comes to take out the painting. And it's just a crudely drawn guy giving the middle finger. And they're like, yeah, just so you know, the price of the painting has gone up to $60 million because they know that it is involved with Emmanuel Grouch or Darius or Emmanuel Grouch III.
Darius.
What? Oh, sorry. My mistake.
Oh, when he was like, he's like, look, I looked into it. I traced back a holding company and seems like the painting was owned by Rumble Corp.
Yeah, Rumble Corp. Come on, Rumble Corp.
Rumble Corp.
This criminal enterprise named Rumble Corp.
He trades on the NASDAQ. RMBL.
Oh, we made a bad. We actually invested all of our the policeman's pension into Rumble Corp. It was a bad investment. It tanked.
Better known by my other name. Rumble Corp. The Rumble.
The Rumble. How'd you get that nickname? No need to go into exposition.
How dare Sir Manuel Grouch? No need to get an exposition after that.
I love it.
That's so good. It's such a good movie. Oh my god.
I had such a I thought this was gonna be another one that we, you know, it just was. I don't know. I don't know what I expected, but I was pleasantly surprised.
No, I knew you would have an enjoyable time with this. I don't know why we hadn't done it. I actually didn't realize it was on Hulu. I just figured that we were going to have to rent. I think that's why, because I just figured we'd have to rent it. But it is on Hulu.
I bought it.
Oh, I rented it.
I
paid money. He got my $3.99. probably 10 cents go back to the actual creators of it. So I'm sorry.
Yeah, I hope they see something from that.
I hope they do. I hope people rent it and, you know, like, look, for as much as, like, as much as, I don't know, that's kind of the thing. It's like, it's kind of like there's a charm to it from just, like, a pure standpoint where it doesn't feel like it's this gigantic Hollywood production and, you know, actual people are making it versus, like, being generated by a committee or a computer or procedurally generated that, like, you know, stuff we're used to and stuff we talk about, stuff we like on this podcast. But it is like, it is cool, like good or bad to like be able to talk about these movies that like, yeah, like they don't have the budget to be on an actual plane. There's curtains hanging up, but like, it still is fun. And there should be
more detaining than most big budget movies we've seen this year.
Yeah. And there should be like, look, we don't give the time of day to a lot of smaller movies. And I think that's a good criticism of the podcast. And we're certainly not like, we're not on the artful side of cinema, but I do think there is space and hopefully continues to be space for movies like this that like are very specific to my particular needs, but not necessarily like gigantic movies. Yeah, I don't know.
Money plane. I gotta play it again. Fuck.
Money plane.
Yeah, I can't not play it one more time for the people listening.
You want to see a man spit a Hall's cough drop into an octopus? You want to see? You want to see
play
a man?
His introduction. Can you please? Can we hear his?
You see a man water cooling a Pentium processor with his own piss.
Darius Emmanuel Grouch, the third. Better known as.
He said Darius,
yeah.
The Rumble. You covered. You want to bet on a dude fucking an alligator? Money plane.
Give a fuck who.
Let's see him say his name again.
I'm the baddest motherfucker on the planet. I am Darius Grouch the Third. The Rumble. And I am taking down the money plane.
It was close enough.
Money plane. Okay.
Basil Exposition, and I am taking down the money plane.
Okay, I'll take the job, Mr. Grouch. Please call me Darius Emmanuel Grouch the Third. Mr. Grouch is my father. Darius Emmanuel Grouch Jr.
Create your own shitty movie.
Three generations of Grouches.
we're gonna play a little
grouchier than the other.
Gonna play a little create your own shitty movie to close out the pod. I'll go first, then Ken Jack, then Trill. Director, a 90s movie, a 90s sitcom star, so a la Kelsey Grammer, a celebrity that isn't an actor or actress, though Edge is technically an actor, but you know what I mean. Then you can give any, you can put anything random in the movie, the plot, location, a vehicle, and then you need a title for your movie. So I'll start off. I'm going to make mine a twist. My movie's going to be a twist. I'm going to go with M. Night. I'm going to draft M. Night Shyamalan for my
good start.
You got to go with a twist. You got it. Nothing like a terribly executed twist. Not that he's done all bad, but this is going to be a bad, this is the Happening type shit. True. What about you?
I think I'm going to get Paul W.S. Anderson to do it.
Hell yeah, Resident Evil?
Yeah, I mean, look, like, he's got a purview of like what he wants to do, and he's accomplished in terms of quantity, but I think he's the right guy for this type of movie.
I just love that he's a combination of two really good director names.
Yep, not quite Paul Anderson, not quite Wes Anderson. He's somewhere in between.
Yeah, just a bit of both. Ken Jack, director.
The director of my movie is going to be Ninja, Tyler Ninja Blevins, to be exact. And that's going to come into play later, and I'll tell you why when we get there.
Okay, so, all right, I have M. Night. M. Night is going to be my director. M. Night's my director, and then my 90s star is going to be Fran Drescher. My 90s sitcom star, I'm going to go with
Mr.
Fran.
Mr. Sheffield! How do you pronounce that? M. Night what? Mr. Sheffield!
Trill, who's your 90s sitcom star?
I think I'm going to take David Hyde Pierce.
Yep, that's a good one.
I knew you were going to take him.
Yeah, well, I look, I'm building on to the Money Plane universe, okay? And I want some continuity in here. He's
Niles.
He's Niles Emmanuel Grouch, and he's coming for revenge on his brother.
He's the, what do you call it? What's the, Jacob from the new Fast and Furious movie?
Yes,
Jacob Toretto.
He's coming back.
All right, my 90s sitcom star is going to be David Schwimmer, aka Ross from Friends, and again, it's all going to come into play later.
Okay, all right, David Schwimmer, celebrity. I had a couple. I was thinking about picking the entire Pawn Stars crew, but I feel like I have to go with the Cake Boss. The Cake Boss is the ultimate villain of a shitty movie. Like, imagine him in the Kelsey Grammer role. He's got a black button-down shirt unbuttoned with his hair coming out of his fucking chest. Well, now he's got like a cast on his hand. I hope he gets better. He does suck ass, but I do hope he gets better. The Cake Boss is going to be my celebrity. Trill, what about you?
I'm going to take a general manager of the Oakland A's, Billy Bean.
Not Brad Pitt, it's Billy Bean. Okay.
Don't say it. It's a non-actor celebrity.
Yeah. No, that's, yeah. Ken Jack.
I wonder how many people would recognize Billy Bean in public. Just a general question. That's no disrespect to Billy Bean.
But one out of every 2,000 would recognize Billy Bean.
My pick is going to be Sir Robert Bryson Hall II, a.k.a. Logic, the rapper. He's retired, but not really. So he's going to be my main character.
Logic, okay, as the main character. My random thing, I want to reveal my plot. So the Cake Boss, he's like, you can't cross me. I'm the Cake Boss. That's his plan, his famous line. You can't arrest me. I'm the Cake Boss. He did say that. My plot twist from M. Night is going to be that Fran Drescher pulls off like her mask, Mission Impossible style, and she's just Janice from Friends.
Oh,
Janice. Ross? what was
that?
I don't know. I was trying to do... You know,
Fran Drescher as Janice.
Just do this. Just do the same voice,
Mr. Sheffield. Oh my God!
Yeah, that's going to be the and the title of my movie is Dreshed to Kill.
No,
oh, that's good. I like that.
Yeah, Dreshed to Kill. That's a title. Trill, what's your random thing, and then what's your title?
Okay, so
then I'm next.
Ken Jack.
Yeah, that's right. Suck it. Totally.
I think Trill was going second, actually.
It doesn't matter.
You said me, then true.
It doesn't matter. Go ahead.
All right. So my movie all takes place within the game of Fortnite. and there's a big evil boss a la Ready Player One who wants to buy the new Epic Pickle Rick skin, but it costs 30 trillion V-Bucks. He hires Virgil Broccoli, who's played by Logic, who's a FaZe Clan reject. And he wants to get back at them for making fun of him during his failed edition. And Chet Hayes will play FaZe Banks during this movie. And Logic will also provide this soundtrack during for this movie, the album being titled I'm a Gamer Boy, B-O-I, including tracks such as Not Now, Mom, I'm Gaming, Salty Spring Shorty, Nerfed, There's Some Poggers in This Chat, God is a Gamer, parentheses, and a Woman, and The Philosopher's Rap. And my title for the movie is A Thief in the Night, and it'll be apostrophe night.
That stinks.
I don't get it.
They're doing a theft within Fort, like they're doing a theft within Fortnite. So it's okay. A thief in the night.
Yeah, that's something I had to see visually to get that. But I, you know what? I think you should make it.
All right. I'll have to get someone on the line. I know the guys are listening from Money Plane. So.
Yeah. So my wild card and title. So my wild card is Jason Giambi. And yeah, you know, the name of the movie is Moneyball Plane. All right, you saw that coming a mile away. So David Hyde Pierce, he comes back as Niles Grouch, and he wants revenge. And the Edge basically gets duped into going on one more job. He said he was dumb. He's back into it, and he's got to go on the Moneyball Plane, which is just a bunch of nerds doing sabermetrics in the sky. And Jason, whatever Giambi brothers, they're both going to be there. They'll both be there. Jeremy and Jason, both of them. All wow. The Giambis are going to be there, and they're going to be fighting the crew with baseball bats, dressed full uniform. No, it's gonna be wild.
Is there another Giambi brother that isn't a baseball player? Possibly
Chet.
Chet, yeah, old
Chet Giambi.
Chet Giambi.
You talking about like the Cooper God, Manning, the Cooper Jeremy. Manning of the Giambi family?
Chet yeah, I thought Giambi. It was possible, but no, just Jeremy.
old Chet Giambi, baby.
Old Chet Giambi. Hit a dinger for Chet. Can't play baseball. Well,
what does
anymore.
Chet do though? Because Chet couldn't play baseball. What is Chet now?
Chet, I don't know, Jeff. What does Chet do? And what's Chet Giambi? What was his calling?
Risk management.
Yeah, he's just an underwriter for health insurance policies.
Works for ICE.
Anything else?
I'm gonna go watch Money Plane again. No. I'm really gonna watch Money Plane again.
You're gonna watch it again.
No, I'm gonna go watch some football. I'm gonna go see what's going on with the old football game. Old Tom Brady.
It's brutal. It's a brutal game.
Yeah, Taysom Hill did Taysom 31
Hill score? Nothing at the half.
Taysom Hill score?
He.
I don't think so. I don't have a dog in the fight.
Taysom Hill score.
I just think one of the most overappreciated things in football is when Taysom Hill does something, and now the announcers have to pretend like it's like, oh, well, here comes Taysom Hill. Wonder what he's up to.
30 years old.
Taysom Hill. Saints in rushing right now.
Taysom Hill 30?
30?
Yeah, so he's BYU.
Holy shit.
Most yeah, BYU, he most did BYU a, players did a mission, are older. Yeah.
They do a mission, right?
Yeah.
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 Yep.
Damn, dude.
All right. I'm going to that.
All right. Well, that's it. I don't know what we're going to review middle of the week. We're still trying to pluck new movies out of the air, so we'll keep looking at it. I always say I'm going to let you guys know earlier. We never fucking do. Also, if you want the Mandalorian hoodies, please go buy them online. They're in the link below. And if you want the This Is The Way hoodie, I would keep an eye out for Cyber Monday. That's all I'll say. I guess ASL, I kind of said everything there. Yeah. That's it. We're Ken Jack and Troll. I'm Jeff Lowe. Talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.